want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross-country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's Replayer.com. And I think you'll be amazed.
Hey, soccer friends. I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give Team Player a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week I have part two with Nate Baker. He challenges me and he makes me think on a daily basis with his posts that he posts. He is a plethora of information for coaches, but like I said, I found him to be very useful as a parent because it starts helping me create and demand what he is teaching the coaches. And if coaches are willing to listen and do these things, that should be something that we should want for our players. Before I say too much more, let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
And having just the general courage to do this in the face of what you just said, like a broken soccer culture where we have the wrong navigation. It's become kind of a self-preservation type of environment. The coaches have to win so they can show that they're worthy. The players have to play in their preferred position and score the goals to show the next coach. The parents have to make sure their kid is starting to make sure they get the game time. They're signaling that they're a special player on it. They got to be a part of the special league. All the while, the players are the ones missing out. And the numbers would follow this too. Despite all the increases in infrastructure, the leagues and how it's grown and all the pro leagues, all the soccer leagues and all the access being completely different than it was 20 years ago, we really aren't producing better players. or like top level players. And a lot of that is when it was the Wild West, when I was playing, and it was just like, if you didn't win your state cup, you weren't going to get the regionals. And that's where the college coaches were. So even if you weren't getting great coaching, you had to find a way, if you were motivated, to become a good enough player to go and do that. So there was mechanisms built in. So like the example I give is like a guy like Clint Dempsey, who's one of the most decorated players in our country's history, came from a very, very small town in Texas that you would know more than me about his story. But the better thing is, like, he had to earn his way. He went to the Dallas Texans. He came through there and he went to Furman with one of the scholarships, maybe the only one he had. And then he went through MLS and he did that and he went to Fulham. Like, that trajectory is not happening today. It's not going to happen because the player today is getting squeezed from both sides. They're not getting this development stuff on the front end. Okay, they're chasing infrastructure. They're being convinced, the parents are convinced that like the higher level, the better patch on your shirt is this resume that I can show the next level. And on the end part of it is that the people that are in charge of developing our players, even at the highest levels, don't have a true vision that they iterate on long term. So what do? They take shortcuts. It becomes a talent accumulation game. And it started with better players win games, but now it's better international players win games. So when you look at the MLS, when you look at college soccer, when you look at some of these levels, like there are less Americans playing despite having all this increased infrastructure that wasn't even available 20 years ago. There's less American players making it to these levels. I coached the one I can think of, Kevin Paredes, who just represented us in the Olympics. I coached him at DC United. He went through that system. He wasn't the only one that signed a homegrown deal at that club. Many of them aren't even playing anymore. And this is 3-4 years ago. Okay. Kids that were our best struggling to find a team to play on in their, before their prime is even supposed to actually take weight. Now, Kevin went to Wolfsburg. He's still finding it tough right now in Germany as it is, but he's the only one that didn't go to the big conglomerate with the Citigroup or Red Bull. Like, he found his way through the entire system and found his way over to Europe at the very top level. Now, that's not the goal of everyone, right? That's not what's going to be the outcome of everyone. But we're not even creating the conditions for those outcomes to occur. So the kid who enjoyed the game and had a spark for it and just wanted to find an environment where he could get better and enjoy his stuff is less likely than it was 20 years ago when the game was more about my... For example, my parents didn't think about when I started to become a decent player at 11, 12, that this kid could really play pro soccer. This kid could really play in college. It wasn't until I was like a sophomore in high school that that even came on our radar. That's at the forefront of every parent's mind at a certain age bracket or at a certain level, where it's like they've fallen in love with the infrastructure. They've fallen in love with these outcomes. They've fallen in love with the benefits of being, I coach within the top level in youth soccer, and the players that I've seen just in the All-Star games or our last competition, they don't look the same. They don't look the same. Because on a lot of ways, they haven't been prepared to excel. They don't have the resilience that I was talking about earlier. They've just been placated. They've either been the best player, and then they're going to find an environment, and this is the case for everyone in this country, where they're no longer good enough, okay? Because they can't overcome the lacking vision in the environment that they have arrived at because the coach there isn't willing to have a longer vision for how to develop this player long-term, because today it's about winning the game. It's about figuring out, and you can argue pro coaches, it's different, but the very best, the ones that have built dynasties, the ones who have really figured out on the long-term, understand what development is. And they're the ones who create things of substance that last time and time again. It's just the harder road. It's the harder road. And people aren't willing to stick with it for a long enough time span. And yeah, until we define it, until it becomes common language and something we can collaborate across levels, no one's going to be really held to account. So that's the mountain I'm on and why I'm glad to talk to you about this, because I think this is the lever. But right, to your point, you said 90% of the coaches you come across don't have any understanding or are not navigated in this way. And Yeah, that's a challenging point. You want to educate people on that and give them a better way.
Yeah. I think for the United States, I feel like we've been in a soccer identity culture on the men's side for about a decade, if that makes sense, or 20, maybe longer. Longer than that. We don't have a soccer identity. We don't have a culture here that is baked into our system. England's going through this. This is something that I've been listening to recently and reading more about. England's in a soccer identity issue. Argentina, of all countries to think of, where some great players are in a soccer identity because the culture, the values aren't there anymore. I think you talked about these pro players getting to the highest level here in the United States, and then they fizzle out at some point because, like you said, it's the game vision. The next goal is missing. They've only prepped for that game. They didn't prep for what you talked about earlier, that void beyond the game. I think that is where we as parents need to understand that, and hold coaches and clubs and coaches that are listening to this and DOCs that are listening to this, they need to understand that is our problem. If we truly want to be the best, it's not getting 15 practices in a week and have little robots out there that can pass the ball zigzag, because as soon as someone comes out there and that has an IQ that has more of a curator as a coach than a chisel, someone with a hammer and a chisel, they're going to be beat every single time because those players just naturally know how to beat those teams that can just zigzag the ball back and forth because they aren't thinking, they're just doing. Oh my gosh, my brain is going a mile a minute because there's so much, because you hit in this short little time already so much that's missing. And I think for the United States, it starts at the top. And the only way to change that, like the whole point of this, is to educate everyone and that's willing to listen. But let's start with the clubs. I mean, you talked about players being lost and not knowing what to do. And the only way to fix that is breaking it down like you have. I mean, you talked about potential. Every person has potential. There's one of my favorite people I quote quite a bit in episodes, and I'm sorry, Jeff, but I'm going to quote you again. He talks about the ripe banana. I don't know where he got this quote from, but he talks about it, that, and it came from a book, and it talks about coaches only want ripe bananas. And once they're no longer ripe, they discard them. And that's not, like you said, every person has potential. And when does that potential end? When does that peak happen? Is it at 14? Is it at 16? Is it at 27, 41? What age do these players finally become no longer ripe and their potential is no longer there? And I think you're more talking about the endless potential. It's not just in that finite moment of U14 or 25 or 27, when they say that players peak at 27 years old, there's always that potential there. It's finding and striving and wanting it. And you talk about, I call it the broken system. I call it, we have some of the best marketing people in the world in the United States marketing U.S. soccer, and I'm all over the place, and I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But it all ties together, is that we as a culture are falling for what's failing us the most, and it's the marketing. It's not bringing it the whole picture together. We're discarding the kids that have potential or that haven't shown potential yet too early, or we're getting rid of kids that aren't showing potential anymore because they aren't scoring 15 goals a season. They're scoring one or two, and they aren't blossoming anymore underneath that model that's there in front of them. And then you get to these, we have how many leagues in this country now? We have the MLS Next, we have ECNL, we have USYS, we have all the ones that fall under the US Club, and ODP. I mean, there's all these different organizations that have all these resources at their disposal, but we aren't, like you said, we are not developing anymore. We aren't getting the best talent. And I'm stuck because I'm stuck on the parent player plus one. And I don't know why that's stuck to me so hard, and the game vision. And I think that's where I'm stuck as a parent seeing this, because the leagues don't provide the best opportunities because it's only the ones that can afford it. It's my biggest pet peeve. The caveat of our U.S. soccer is it's a pay-to-play model, and only the people that can afford it can play at the top. And no more true development is being done, because just because you have money doesn't mean you have talent. And normally they don't have the mindset to make it to the next level. They don't have that fortitude, those values to go to the next level, because everything's been handed to them. I'm not trying to knock our local MLS club, but they've had a lot of issues within their academy where players go off and they show up and they go overseas, and all of a sudden they've never been given those values. In a conversation I recently have, what's his name? Wagner, Ings Wagner. He talks about the foundation of a home. I'm butchering his name. I'm sorry, but he talks about the foundation and the most important part of that foundation. It's not the actual foundation. That's the tactical side of the game. It's the roof. It's what's overhead. It's that mind, those values. And that's why I don't think we're winning, because that's what you initially talked about. That is the values that we need to be. That's the part of the foundation that we need to have, or the roof overhead that he talks about and that he talked about in his talk. It's the brain. It's creating those values so they can and not fizzle, not give up, and feeling that pressure. So how do we change that mantra of winning at all cost and looking at building the resume for the next step versus if they're not how do I describe this? If the mindset is not correct, they will not make it beyond the scope that they're in. And your culture vision, playing vision, and game vision times the iteration, I think that is, I don't know much more. It's like my brain is...
People can understand like how much I'm overwhelmed right now. I'm overstimulated.
Because it's also intertwined. And we as a soccer country that wants to be a soccer developing country, we have to forego the vision of the wins, especially at the younger ages, so we can have the wins later on. I don't think you're talking about not being competitive. I think you're talking about being competitive in the right moments at the right times. And that is your game vision and not anywhere else. Being competitive in training, being competitive. Yes, that's natural, but it's the starting and the end. It's figuring out your goals. I guess that's the best way of putting it in my head.
Yes. Right now. I think a lot of times people think it's an either or scenario when it comes to development, that you're either choosing to develop people in spite of performance, or you push that development to the side for the sake of winning. And that's a big misunderstanding, right? So if I'm developing my team and I'm not just teaching them something that doesn't allow them to be successful on match day, I'm not giving them values that won't sustain them during a match. These things iterated long term create the conditions for winning to happen, and not only happen, but happen long term. If it was just a talent us grabbing, we would never compete at the level that we're currently at. We get the kids that are late developers. We get the kids that aren't monsters physically. We get the ones that are technical, but that skill set is not as valued. Where we get the kids that have stayed with us from day one. And yeah, development and winning aren't opposite sides of a coin. There's something that development creates the conditions for sustained winning, for sustained success. The part is that it's more the development is the longer road, the one that's less charted, and it requires a bravery. And this gets, I want to try to put everything you said into context. And I wrote an article not too long ago saying that the game is no longer for the players. Everything in the system is built around not developing the player, but giving you the impression that they aren't being developed, right? There's a lot of misunderstandings. Everything from infrastructure is this new understanding of development, better league, pathways, all this stuff. Somehow your player is getting better on by default, by coming through this. And then the self-preservation at the very top end of it, where I have to win games, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to take these short. You end up realizing that no one within this ecosystem can really find their potential unless they're just the most strongest willed kid. Like Kevin, who's at Wolfsburg and went through it. like his mentality was incredible. He came from strong parents, a strong household, and he was one of the slighter kids all the time. And he just kept going. He kept going. He wasn't the best when I saw him at 13. He was one of our better players, but like still slight, had a lot of growing to do, but he always had that mentality, and the mentality is the thing that got him through this. And it will allow him the opportunity to continue to be successful. Now, when everything is not about the player and it's been flipped, where the player is actually serving the coach, it's serving the administrator, it's serving the director, it's serving some baseline, some dollar point, something like that, some impression, then you realize as a developer, someone who comes in with this methodology, someone who comes in with a culture vision and sort of stuff, you're not only speaking a different language, you're an alien. You're a foreign being coming into an environment that you're not only speaking a different language, you're a threat. You're a threat to the current construct, because all the way down, we are all complicitly agreeing to this non-developmental ideal if you're in a position of leadership. And by questioning it and by doing something different, seeing a longer vision, believing in value, and not taking these short steps, you're implicitly critiquing our current culture as is. So it's hard. It's hard, especially, and I used to think this, we just need some people to fall out of their positions to move on. And then a new group of people will come in. New people with ideals and want to change the game, not too dissimilar to you or I. That's not the case, because the person below that person had to play a game to get to that place. And they had to implicitly subscribe to all the non-developmental ideals that we've been talking about this entire podcast. And by the time they get there, they're not thinking about the future of the game. They're not thinking about the players and their team. They're thinking about themselves. And the thing has been flipped. So the game right now is not for the players. So this happens a lot. I'll again relate it back to me. So my under-16s team was an extremely talented team. Guys have been there from the start. Guys who were getting into national teams. Guys who a very talented group. But when I came in and tried to give this culture angle at a very important time, right now at under 16, what are you looking at? You're looking at college. You're looking at, some of them are looking at professional things, like these sort of things. They had the platform. They're in this MLS Next platform. So they feel like they're like one step away, right? And a lot of the stuff I was saying, they would nod along with, but didn't really believe in it or wouldn't champion it on the way home, or wouldn't, like some did, and those guys stayed and they benefited from it 2 years later in their development. Some left, went somewhere else, saw what that was, and they came right back. And this includes any club in the general area. This education, there is this self-selection that happens, but it requires you to stick to your principles and to believe in something. And what you realize is people are yearning for this on some level. They're yearning for an environment where their kid is valued, regardless of where they are in the team, that there's a real true vision, a holistic one that allows them to become better people as well as players, and creates the conditions for anything to really occur, which in a landscape is really more difficult than it was when I went to college, to get into college and to play. I've got a group of kids that are supremely talented, maybe as talented as I was as a player. But within the current landscape, it's harder to play D1 soccer than it has before, because the league is much more foreign. They've just limited the roster spots to 28 from a new NCAA rule. The transfer portal has over 670 kids in it, right? The kid players have been discarded from their teams or just hated the environment they were in, seeking, hoping for any environment that might be beneficial to them. And there's just no spots for these seniors on my team that are high level players to go and play somewhere. My hope is that, you know what, maybe you don't play D1, maybe you play at a lower level, maybe you don't play at all. But with this experience, would you change anything about it? Has it not prepared you for whatever does come next? Right? Because at the end of the day, that's what sport used to be. It used to be a vehicle, just like anything, any passion, that could move us closer to our better selves. And somehow along the lines with this increased infrastructure, the PR, whatever you want to say, poor leadership, we've lost our way. We've lost our way as a culture. And your right banana analogy, and this is where I'll end a little bit on this train of thought as I try to summarize all this stuff and valuable stuff you said before. The right banana thing, there is a really, really, and it's not too far of a word to say, there's a dehumanization aspect of all of this that occurs. And it's not something that I experience as a player, all my friends and my people are the same. This continues to be the case. I just had coffee with a former player in one of my previous schools and his wife, who were college athletes, them describing the same things I'm seeing over and over again, where I like to say people see players right now as slabs of meat with an expiration date, not slabs of clay that could be molded into masterpieces. All right. As soon as they start to stink or they can't overcome the short vision that's in front of them to win or overcome the environment at the benefit of its coach, they're chucked to the side. And that can play its way out in some truly horrific ways. Truly horrific ways. I've been in some environments that I've seen players destroyed for the sake of some egomaniac and his ego and making him feel a little less miserable in that moment. So it's even more than fixing the soccer culture. It's even more like kids need something today. They have so many more options. They have so many less role models. They have so many less things that help them build resilience in a society that just says everything's okay. And it's okay to sidestep this challenge and to feel real value in the world, self-value, self-respect. And I see this time and time again. It's only a matter of time before the player finds an environment where they're no longer good enough. There's this dehumanization that goes on. It doesn't matter if it's horrific when it's at the younger age groups, but this stuff happens at every level. And it's horrific regardless of the age, because no one deserves to be treated that way. Because in the end, it's not about the player. It's about protecting the ego of the leader there to signal enough that it's not their fault. It's not their responsibility. When it is their responsibility, they have the equity. If it's not the leader, then who? So more than anything, it's just, can we create better environments for people, right? Maybe that's the big macro space in this, but development for me, this is why I'm so passionate about it. And this is why it's not the player's fault. There's so many talented players out there. There's so many kids that can play. They just need the environments. They need the belief. They need someone to push them. They need someone to say, hey, I believe in your potential. Let's keep going here. And those are hard environments to find.
It is. I always say there's three egos on the pitch. Actually, there's technically five, but if you include the referees. But there's really four, not three, four. There is the player's ego, the parent's ego, the coach's ego, and the most important one, which is what you're focused on, is the player-centric ego, is what I call it. That was my, it's all the focus is on the player. It's trying to uplift them, as you say, to meet their most potential, to bring them to the greatest potential in every moment that they're in. It's learning how to get there. And it's hard. I don't know where to start, because at the younger ages, I've seen coaches say, your player is a cog in my wheel, and I put aside his development for the greater good of the team. And as a parent hearing that, your mind is like, why did you just waste a year of my time? Because I had to sign a year contract with you. It is, we have a talk in our home quite a bit. My wife and I do. We talk about, we want a coach that takes an interest in our player. He's just not someone that is promoting this coach, to moving this coach to their next level. It is truly moving our player. And this is where I think maybe that's where my resonation is towards you. It's that you're answering those questions as a parent, is how do we get a coach that way? And I feel as a parent, I look as a parent at my player, he doesn't have to be on the most winning team. I really don't care. Is my player progressing technically, mentally, physically, the direction that he needs? Because I have always said, and I'm going to have to correct myself now. I've always said true development is the byproduct of winning is the true development of, I can't even get it straight out. I can't spit it out. Winning is the true byproduct of development. There we go.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm going to have to rephrase this because it's not true development. Because I don't think there's no such thing as true development anymore. It's total development. I think that might be the better way of phrasing this, because total development is hitting on everything you're talking about. It's not just the technical, it is the individual. And I think you talk about players being the slab of meat. They're pieces of chess on the mat, on the chessboard that gets the coach to the next place they need to be. And I'm not going to say what my definition is. What you're talking about is true development or total development. The byproduct of total development is winning. And winning doesn't mean numbers on the scoreboard. Winning, to me, it's creating the mindset they have to go to the next level. It's getting them to the next stages. And this was a conversation I had the other day with a friend that coaches baseball, and he talked about, it's not the kids that are the most talented and the players that are the most talented going to be pro. It's the ones that have the most perseverance, that have the values, the mindset to get to the next level. We see it in the United States. The players that are getting to the top in the United States, I don't think are the most talented players. They're just the players that have been able to persevere the longest in the system. I talked to a coach last year, and he was telling me that we have to teach the players to survive the game so later they can survive the business when they decide to go pro, or able to go pro. I shouldn't say decide, when they have the opportunity to go pro. And that really resonated with me, because the conversation I had the other day, and then saying that, having that coming up again today, really furthers talks about what you're talking about. I feel is the values, the culture, the vision, the goals all have to align in order to have a player have the resilience to get to that point. And if we truly want the best players at the top, like you said, every player has potential. There's not a single player, and it's taking those ones that haven't ripened yet or that haven't been discarded. I don't know. I can only look at my own kid. Every coach has seen him differently. And it's fun hearing the conversations and how they see him. And I can only relate this personally because I only have two kids. And I can only relate it to them. What Coach A might see my player as, he's past his prime. Or he's not good enough to be at this level. And then I get a coach like I have today that sees my son as a player that coaches dream of, which I've never heard from a coach before. I'm not saying it's my current coach, my son's coach, but this is a conversation I've had with a coach about my son. And it's because he listens, he wants to do things. And I think that goes back to what you talk about with that one coach way back in this conversation, where he says they are not from the most socioeconomic and they tend to struggle with getting to places on time. And sometimes the values don't align with the culture the coach is building, but the coach sees that potential in those players and the value of those players as the human element. I always joke, when I coached, I always had to take the human element out of the game because I tend to be meaner. If I put the human element into the game, I'm more analytical. If I take it out, I'm more analytical and not so much emotional. I guess that might be the better way of putting it. But you're saying we have to put the human element back into it. They aren't just a number to the ends of the means. They are, at the younger ages, I guess at the professional level, we're seeing this being looked at different. Yes, these players are talented and they're phenomenal, but they're not just a piece of meat. And the sports psychology world, they're talking more and more about how to bring the best out of the players. And when you start looking at these clubs that are trying to take what they have and build what they have with these players, they're putting a human value into them where we're missing that. And parents need to understand we as parents need to understand our players isn't just a slab of meat for their goals, that they are also a human and not just a statistic trying to get to the next level. How do we then change this perspective? Other than having conversations like this, how do we change this perspective? How do we evaluate players as potential and not just an expiration date? Or do you have an idea for this at all?
Big picture, there's no way to really understand how you can completely flip an entire culture other than being brave enough to teach the model and to build what I can say, for lack of better words, is proof of product. I see it on the micro within my general area where we were the small mom and pop shop that did things differently, played different ways, continued to develop really high level technical, strong players. And now parents are starting to understand that's a good environment for my child. That's a good environment if this is what you're looking for. Because it's not for everyone. I think there's so much tighter than this. It's so complex. But the parent that's screaming the entire time during a match, he isn't really, or she or he is not really screaming about the injustice that's happening on the field right now. They're compensating for something bigger in their own life that they haven't quite sorted out. So we want to really get psychoanalytical about this. Is a mental health issue on some levels where egoism has taken over and we can't see the stuff that's 6 inches in front of our face and how that's ruining or at the very least harming the environment children are coming through. So it's a game that's not for the players, in my opinion. But yeah, but in writing for the last 2 years from a public, in a public space, I realized there are a lot of people that identify with the ideals, that identify with this idea of development. And because they lived it, they lived what it, a really negative experience of the game, whether it's as a player or later as a parent or a coach. And they're trying to figure out, and a lot of these coaches, a lot of these people aren't tied to the high end, like league or infrastructure, right? Because there is a complicit nature to those environments. If I don't coach at the club I'm at with my best friend, I don't coach anymore because I'm no longer trying to play the game of finding the next level or find that I am completely content with the project we have. And being the example we want to be. But I understand that this is difficult. This is difficult for a lot of people because there is a barrier to entry when these ideals are the things that are being espoused because they run counter to a lot of the things that are happening at every level in this country. So it's difficult. So the people that actually identify with our stuff are people that are small clubs, younger age groups, and aren't attached to the highest level of the infrastructure. And just at their heart and their core, they just want to provide a really good environment and a really good vision for their people. They want to help them. They want to help them. And the chances of them becoming professionals is not a thought in their mind. They're just trying to create a really good experience, something they can take with them and something that can allow them to win the next game, whether it's on or off the field. All right, to continue their development. That's what sport is. That's what it's a vehicle for greater things. And all we can do is be the example we want to be. This is clearly the hill I'll die on, and just espousing the developments, this philosophy around development until it finds its way, until I make enough of a dent. But what people can do, what parents can do, is that they can take the knowledge that they have today or just the general knowledge of what the sport is supposed to be, right? And use that to understand, what am I looking at right now? Is my son or daughter coming to the field not excited about training? Are they leaving the field drained emotionally, physically? Are they not excited? Are they not going out in the side yard as much, dribbling the ball on their own, right? Is there a holistic vision that's being articulated by not just the director, but the head coach, and being iterated on and stressed in the common communication if they're not winning games, take that one out. Stop looking at that. Is my son or daughter getting better week to week? Again, my daughter's dance. Okay, I know nothing about dancing. And it's hard to watch their practices because they're behind a closed door. I pick them up. I take them there occasionally when I'm not coaching. But when we go to the big competitions at the end of the year, you know, where I see one or two or three of them during a 6-month span, without knowing anything about dancing, I can see the growth points in them. I can see how my second child, who's not as coordinated as my other two, is really becoming more agile and more dynamic in her movements. She's an introvert, but they got her out front on a stage in front of thousands of people. That's pretty incredible. This is going to serve her long term. This is incredible. We're going to celebrate this. My oldest, who's hard on herself, she's like her father, determined, all this sort of stuff. I was at one of these dance competitions, and during a very intimate dance where it's like a 5-6 person dance, she completely froze on stage. She ran off. My wife left to comfort her in that very tough moment. But when my wife left, she didn't see that my daughter came back onto the stage and finished the best way she could. Now for me, and when my wife saw her, she was just comforting her because this doesn't matter. You're meeting someone in their vulnerable moment. She's feels horrible, right? She's let her team down, all the negative stuff. But what happened is the coach hugged her, said, it's all right. We learned from it. We've all done it. She empathized with her. My wife found her and did it. And then her father came over and said, I couldn't be more proud of you. If I never see another dance of yours, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. No way your dad would have done the same thing and jumped back on stage and finished strong. There's no way. But in that moment, I wonder how many parents would have saw that scene. And again, I'm not the best parent. I'm learning every day. And I'm saying this purely from an athletic standpoint. But if you saw your daughter do the equivalent, whether it on the soccer field, any other court, would you have seen the incredible win, the incredible resilience that she showed in that moment? And would you have celebrated it? And would you have seen how that's going to be a lever that will serve her if supported in the right way, that can serve her the rest of her life? And that was the most proud I've been of her, like at a dance. So dancing is not as important as what she's doing as it is a vehicle for growth. And on that day, despite freezing and coming back on stage, she moved way further, way closer to her potential than actually finishing the dance would have. So we have to re-understand what winning is. Winning is just taking that next step and staying in the game, right? And too many kids are leaving the game. Too many kids don't feel like they belong in the game. The game is not even for them, as we've alluded to. So that's what sport is meant to be. And some of these kids will become pros. Some of them will become members of our national team. But right now, it's become harder because they're getting squeezed from both sides. And we've forgotten what sport is meant to be. It's meant to be a vehicle for chasing our best self. I think that example might give your parents a bit more clarity on what the game we're really trying to play and whether the coach in that space would have supported their son or daughter in the same way. There's things we can look at, and then you can start selecting a better environment that gets your kid closer to their potential. That's what winning becomes. And with enough of that, we start self-selecting these poor environments out, and we start championing this development stuff. And the stuff can grow. I don't know if I answered your question, but...
No, you answered it, because I think you talking about your daughter, and I don't think... There's so much more we can dive into here, but talking about your daughter, and it's championing those moments. My favorite example, and I've overused it probably now, is with my son. I interviewed a coach who has, it's on my podcast, I can say who it is, Jermaine Genus, who played in the EPL, who is played for England's national team. I talked to his dad, and he talked about pushing his kids, but learning where that push point is and just being a step beyond it, finding that scope of pressure, but also learning to teach them that they have to be able to talk to you about it. And I remember sitting in my truck
and talking to my son, and I love talking soccer with him. I love talking about having him push himself to be better. And now the scope is pushing himself to be better academically. He's in fifth grade now. He needs to start paying attention to his grades and start learning to focus more on being a smart kid so he can read his contract the day that he signs a pro contract and understand what he's talking about. But this being realistic is having him understand the importance of education, but also learning to say, Dad, you need to shut up. You're talking too much. I can't handle that pressure. And I think the moment you shared of your daughter, of continuing and supporting her and teaching our kids and our players, our athletes and whatever they may be in, and coaches have to be willing to hear this, and players have to be willing to tell them in a safe environment that I need to take a step back. I need to have that comfort and that support, and knowing that when I do make a mistake, or I won't even call it a mistake, I'll call it a blip in the moment of life, because that's what they are. It's moments to look back on to gain traction, to go forward again. And I think we as parents have to have those moments where our kids feel comfortable enough when they have moments like your daughter, or what I did with my son, teaching him that it's okay to tell us what's going on, or okay to make a mistake and go out and be a champion at the end and finishing it. Because I guarantee you, if my kid did what your daughter did, he wouldn't be back out on stage, neither my daughter, because they would be too embarrassed. And your daughter embraced the moment. You can't beat that as a parent, that moment as a parent seeing it. Yeah. I'm going to wrap this up because I think we could go on for hours on this topic and just dive deeper and deeper and deeper. And I think this is something that we might have to revisit in the future again, if you're up to it. But I'm going to ask my last question.
Okay.
And it's a 3-part, 4-part question, and you can break it down however you want, because you play, you coach. And I feel like what you're doing now is coaching, but it's a different form of coaching. Who has been the greatest influence throughout your journey? So who's been the greatest influence on you as a player? Who's been the greatest influence as you as a coach, coaching other players? And who's been the greatest influence on you on this awesome journey that you're on? A journey that we need to see more of.
As a player, there's heroes I idolized and that I took stuff from their game. But honestly, I just explored the ball in my side yard, and I just had this love for the game, which allowed me to adapt and to a pretty good player in this country. I don't know, there was guys that I would study like a Maldini, or I loved, my favorite player was Thierry Henry, but I'd never played really either of the positions outside of Maldini. But I think what I became, a very technical, smart, intelligent player, was one that was just spent learning, just being hungry to learn more and more and explore the ball in my side yard, try new things, and then try to take them into the match and just believe in myself more and more as it went on. As a coach, there's been no bigger influence in my life than Dave Brandt. Dave was a Seamus coach who won 6 national championships at the D3 level and built a dynasty down at Messiah College and outside of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. My first year professionally was in 2007. I was 21, just out of college, finishing my last semester at American, making the trip from DC to Harrisburg every day and week until I finished there. And I had the privilege of playing with 2 players over my 3 years there that played for him at Messiah. And soon after, he would take the job at the U.S. Naval Academy. I grew up in Bowie, Maryland, which is about 20 minutes away from Annapolis and outside of Washington, D.C. And I went to a game, one of their games, and I remember going to the game and it being almost like a spiritual experience, because I was witnessing and watching something that I really hadn't seen at this level. It was being done outside in this very small town in Pennsylvania. And it inspired me to say, there's something here, because like I said before, all I had was intuitions. I knew that my experience wasn't optimal, but there's something here worth exploring. When I was done playing, I just sought him out I would just, first it was trying to volunteer for him, but what I was doing was getting coffee with him. I was going to his office to talk his philosophy. I was going and watching his practices. I was watching his camps. When the volunteer job opened up, I'd ask camps. When the volunteer, a long time before he's, I'll take someone. And it took him a long time, took him a network in here, some guy to learn the game with no real focus around that learning. But the 3 years I spent with Dave were foundational. And they gave, it was the first time I felt like a part of the team that I always wanted to be a part of. And he gave shape to my intuitions in a way that he was the first developer I really have worked with. And he's the best. So no coaches influenced me better than Dave Brandt, who's the current head coach at Bucknell, doing another incredible job there. And finally, I think you asked who has helped me in life the most. Is that correct?
With this journey that you're on with the developer's way.
Yeah. My wife, I met while I was in Harrisburg, a very special city to me now, looking back, and the people I met, I mean, the serendipity that occurred. But to have someone that showed me, because I was a wrung out towel that had this identity that I held so dear of being special by being this professional soccer player and playing at the very highest levels and representing my national team in World Cups. And I was falling short of that. And I was falling short in a lot of areas. And I had sacrificed a lot to get there. And she met me in a moment where she, in her own way, showed me that there's bigger spaces to evolve into, that your potential is bigger than just being a player. She might not have said that explicitly, but every day when she interacted with me, she showed me there was more space to move into. And made it even that much more enjoyable knowing someone was going with it with me and I wasn't taking that journey alone. So the belief and in some ways permission to really pursue what ends up being where we are today and the beautiful family have and this potential that was far greater than anything I could have defined in the first place. Like my wife has been a guide in that way that came to me at the exact right moment where I needed her most and has been the most influential person helping me become the person I am and even develop the philosophy that we're speaking about today. So that would be my answer.
Hey everyone, I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. Nate was a great guest. This two-part series was very informative for me. It clicked probably in the beginning of the first episode, then all of a sudden it clicked drastically and I was able to break down the questions better and fully understand what he was saying to me. I am sorry for the delay of that as your host, but this is a learning process. These things are not easy to come across. These topics can be complex. And I have been following Nate probably for a good 6-7 months now. And I reference him quite a bit to when I'm talking to coaches and trying to better understand what's really going on. As a parent, this is critical. The more we learn, the better we have our resources, the more we are able to provide our player the better future. And I hope you take what he has to say to heart. As I always say, I think these conversations are critical for us to have a better understanding of our players' future. Hey, everyone. If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review. Share this. Share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.